But we start with Alanis Morissette, a musician who, despite her reputation for angst-ridden musical breakup drama, has sold 60 million albums and won 7 Grammy Awards. Her 1995 album, Jagged Little Pill, on which a failed relationship is picked over with forensic detail, became the biggest-selling debut record of all time. 17 years on from that record, and its follow-up, the equally candid, supposed former infatuation junkie, Alanis Morissette has found domestic happiness as a wife and a mother, and that's apparent in the more mature and reflective lyrical tone of her new album Havoc and Bright Lights. When I met her recently, I asked Alanis Morissette about the theme of hope and happiness on the record.
Well, the themes actually wind up emerging as I go, so beforehand I have no idea, but I know that when I'm done I'll have a real great snapshot of that period of time, the one that I'll look back on when I'm 108, and it'll be like a candid photo. So the themes that emerged on this record, you know, a lot of women's issues, being a new mom on a song called Guardian, and then moving away from misogyny, etc., you know, at a snail's pace sometimes, but it's still, you know, our world is changing. Commentary on fame and celebrity, and so there's a lot of commentary on the internal worlds.
There's a song called Celebrity.
Yes.
Now, that seems to be a pretty savage indictment of the idea of instant celebrity in particular.
I live in the heart of Hollywood, so, you know, I'm in the midst of this fervor for, in particular, the values in the West, but certainly in Hollywood, are for staying 21 years old forever, being rich and being very famous sometimes, you know, as an end as opposed to fame being a means to an end, you know. So for me, fame in and of itself is not as enticing to me, but using it as a tool is.
But living in Hollywood there, which is the capital city of fame, of celebrity, are you even more aware of that because of where you came, being Canadian and coming from a small town? Does that emphasize the falseness of it, do you think?
It emphasizes the lack of taking a larger context into consideration, you know. So Hollywood, and I dare say America sometimes, can be kind of narcissistic in that they're perhaps not aware of how other people do things around the planet. So Hollywood is an amplified version of that. So yeah, I have to comment on that. Being a Canadian, I lived in Germany as a child, and I travel a lot, so I see the different lenses you can look through depending upon what country I'm in, whereas those that are drawn to Hollywood sometimes perhaps haven't traveled the planet to the point where they have, you know, they don't take themselves that seriously. But I enjoy a good shallow moment here and there. It's just a piece of the pie versus, you know, the core of it for me.
I'm broke, but I'm happy. I'm poor, but I'm kind. I'm short, but I'm healthy.
When you arrived, and it was almost, it felt like overnight success, global success, with Jagged Little Pill.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of superstardom and fame that you achieve very quickly, that a lot of people spend a lot of time building up to. Was that hard to take for it to arrive so quickly?
Yes, it felt really quick, to the point where I remember being in a van traveling around America touring, thinking that I was attempting to will myself to sleep to get back to reality, because everything felt really surreal. And I was grabbing that brass ring, you know, that I'd been told. I'd been sold the full bill of goods that I think everyone is sold in the West, which is, you know, achieve all these things, be in the Guinness Book of World Records, and that's what success is defined as. So I'd achieved all those, and I was lost.
And that record, it was the fastest-selling debut album of all time, I think.
Yeah,
and
I think it broke a bunch of fancy records.
Now, you must have been pleased at the time. You must have been punching the air.
Yeah.
But when did the flip side kick in? When do you think, this is not really what I expected? I mean, how did that manifest itself?
Well, part of what I was sold and really bought was that fame would afford me higher self-esteem and more friends and more connection. You know, it was sort of sold as fame will give you all the joys. You know, it's like a commercial that's very titillating. So I think after Hand in My Pocket, I was walking around New York. The song had come out and the video had come out. You know, I remember not being able to walk around New York, and I was stopped by people, and it was a head spinner. And there were a lot, you know, there were a lot of invasive moments, people slipping notes in my hotel room beds, and, you know, people pulling my hair and showing up outside my hotel room door when I was, you know, at 4 a.m, and just certain things that made it so that being here wasn't so fun anymore.
I want you to know I'm be for you.
Do you think people were wanting a piece of you because of what you were writing about and because you were voicing what a lot of women were feeling, particularly about relationships? With that song, You Ought to Know.
I know the version of me. Is she perverted like me?
You are screaming in the face of a man, or, you know, not even in the face of the man, because the man's gone. But, I mean, it was a song that was probably sung by millions of women around the world.
Yes.
At the back of a disappearing man.
Yes. In terms of being responsible for people, I was very overwhelmed by that, because there was the over-responsibility part, which I wasn't, you know, I wasn't up for. But in terms of people taking it and making their own, that was fine. I had to stop hearing other people's takes on the songs after a while, though, because I was hearing too many versions. You know, it's not even so much that I cared whether it was accurate or not, because once I do share a record, it's not mine anymore anyway.
And I'm here to remind you of the mess you left when you went away. It's not
And you never hid behind, you know, the idea that they're all story. A lot of songwriters, when you say, oh, so it's about this situation, they say, no, it's just a story. I'm creating characters, vignettes, mm-hmm. situations. You've always been upfront and clear that actually you are drawing on from this deep well of personal experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm the kind of woman who really likes autobiographical movies and books, and I just feel compelled by a true story. And while I respect, you know, novel writers and you know, movie writers, and it's compelling in its own way, I'm the woman who might leave a movie theater if it's a fiction story, but I'll never leave, no matter how hard it is for me to sit through a story. If it's a true story, it's hard for me to leave it.
A lot of people would argue that it's always harder for a woman to work in this business. I mean, rock and roll has always been such a male game. Did you find that? Because a lot of people said you were breaking, you were one of those women, one of those artists that broke the rules, that actually showed women that it could be done on your terms.
Yes.
Is that the way it worked out, or was it far more complicated than that?
There was a profound patriarchy, and I would dare say even misogyny and chauvinism in the rock and roll world. You know, I would do all these festivals where it was me and Rage Against the Machine and Radiohead and Prodigy and seven other man bands, you know, and so it was a little bit of a rough little sister energy that I had, you know, and all that went along with that. But I'd grown up with two older brothers, so it felt familiar for me. I wasn't, my wings didn't feel clipped, no matter who wanted to interact with me in a disrespectful way. I wasn't having it. But at the same time, I look back on it and I think, wow, it was a huge boys club.
Yeah. You still love the rock and roll circus aspect.
I live for rock and roll. I live for glitter, sweaty, you know, there's a part of me that was born in leather pants or fake leather.
You still
leather
got
pants.
Them on. You got them on now.
Fake leather, everybody. Don't worry. So yeah, I think that's actually the only prophetic image that I had ever since I was a young child. You know, a lot of artists talk about having seen their future and their success. The one thing I always saw was my traveling around the planet and singing. So I'll be doing that till people won't have me anymore, and probably still after that.
I was talking to Alanis Morissette. That track's called Guardian. It's from the new album Havoc and Bright Lights, which is released on August the 28th.